Welcome to the Culture Shock Podcast. My name is Stephen Adeboye, and on this episode, we are talking about all things attraction, how to deal with rejection, and also compromise. I think those are interesting topics to discuss, specifically when it comes to relationships. So on this episode, I had the opportunity to speak to Jessica, who you've heard before in the previous episodes of the podcast in season 3. And yeah, it was just a nice catch up, unscripted, just let's see what happens. And I really hope you enjoy this one. All right then, without further ado, here's the episode.
All right, hey everybody, welcome to the Culture Shock Podcast. My name is Steve Adeboye, and by popular request, because I know my friends, I know people who have listened and have listened really well, have enjoyed a few of our sessions in terms of relationships and self-love. So now I'm going to allow my guest to introduce herself once again.
Yeah, hello. I'm Jessica. I'm a self-love and relationship coach based here in London. And yeah, what else do you want to know?
I don't worry.
Like, I'm a veteran on this podcast. I don't need to introduce myself.
I'll tell you something. So I think we've spoken about this before, but a few of my guy friends, and even friends that were, you know, that are female, and some of the girls I've dated in the past, they listened to the episode.
Really?
They did.
I love that.
Without me prompting them.
I think it's because it's such an interesting topic, because so often when we talk about relationships and stuff, we talk about it as quite conceptual, and it's not very often that we talk about our personal experiences and relate them to one another. And also, I think being a man and a woman and being able to see what those conversations look like, of course people want to be a fly on the wall.
I know. It's from my perspective, I'm not an expert in this. I'm just a guy talking about my life, and somehow you guys are interested. So one of the key things that I think a lot of people were kind of curious to know, let me just put this here for everyone to hear, is attraction. I think people are saying, oh, you know, I attract narcissists, I attract people who are not good for me. And part of the reason why is maybe where they're finding them and so forth. Do you feel, in a way, how you find your partner, obviously the biggest step in terms of any date and what happens afterwards, but how do people navigate through that? And how do people find themselves in a way where they can attract the right people?
Oh, can you?
I know, I went deep.
I think, well, the first thing that comes to mind is probably that the majority of people nowadays meet online through a dating app, whichever one you choose to use. And that has all of the convenience of, you know, it's just so simple. Everything is at your fingertips. You can swipe your finger, go through thousands of people. And I think that in itself sets us up for seeing people as disposable, seeing people as, yeah, just things to acquire, or, oh, I don't really like that one, next. There's no real emotional connection, attachment, even to the looking for a partner process. I mean, you know, obviously some people, like one of my best friends is getting married this summer, they met on Bumble. You know, there are obviously wonderful stories, but the majority of people, I think, who are kind of our age bracket, maybe looking for something serious, maybe not, look for a partner online. And that has its whole range of encouraging of bad behavior, but it's also something which we did talk about attachment styles last time.
Yeah, we did, yeah.
And it's something crazy, like 80% of people that you meet on a dating app have an unhealthy attachment style. And so you, if you think about that, you think the likelihood is you probably have an unhealthy attachment style, and they probably do as well. So if you're thinking, yeah, maybe I attract, you know, someone with like daddy issues, I hate that phrase, or you're attracting someone who, you attract lots of people who like ghost you, for example, it's something, yes, about the way that you're searching for a partner, but also there is obviously something about you yourself, the image that you give off and that kind of thing. But I think it's a balance of both things. Like, how else do people meet nowadays? I think especially with COVID, so many people don't know how to start a conversation anymore, and they're so awkward. Like, when was the last time you would have chatted someone up in a bar?
Do you want my answer?
Yeah, of course I do.
So I think we spoke about this off camera and off, you know, the record, that my approach is trying to do it in person as well. And I think it provides an element of knowing who you're talking to, visually speaking, and you get a vibe and energy from the person. Now, it's scary because it's how you approach the person saying hi. So you don't want to approach them when they're busy, or when they're people, you know, when they have priorities. So you got to read their body cues and stuff like that. But it's an art form as well, because you're engaging in conversation, and you're engaging with someone you don't know, unless you're in the proximity that, you know, you can talk around the things that are around you. So you kind of had to sort of have that confidence. And I think that's what a lot of people are lacking, is the confidence to go up and say hi, because the fear of rejection hurts.
Yeah, but it's almost as though, and this is something which, I mean, I've experienced a lot through dating, is the fear of rejection is so strong. It's like this paralyzing fear. So, you know, it can lead to things like not even speaking to someone that we, like, fancy on a night out. But it can be things like not being able to communicate how you feel. Like, what is this fear of rejection? People are like, oh, I'd never say I love you first. Things like that, which hugely matter. And, you know, they build intimacy, they build connection, they build, you know, all of these things. But the fear of rejection is so huge. And I think it's probably one of the biggest obstacles to, I mean, I would say to relationships, but also to so many other parts of life. Like, the reason that we don't talk about, or like ask for a pay rise or ask for the promotion is the fear that we'll be rejected. And we just let that like lead our lives. And it's such a strong... such a strong feeling, and I wonder why, and I think particularly like of our generation, why that is so powerful. I find it bewildering, really.
Yeah, I have my theories. I think we've been protected for a while, to the point where, sorry guys, I don't
care.
Yeah, we have. I mean, in comparison to what our parents and older generations have gone through, they just got on with it. But with the protection, also the abundance of opportunities as well. So you want to have control of your life and at the same time protect your side of your life, right? You don't want anyone in, but you want them to be a part of it. So you're now juggling the idea of people coming in and out.
Yeah.
But it's funny, you don't do that with friendships as much as you do that with relationships, I believe. If you find some cool, good friends, you're like, okay, they're going to be part of my journey. But when it's someone that's like very intimate to you, and that's like the most intimate thing you do with someone, sorry, like I'm going to say it, it's just like, yeah, and we're allowed that side, but your friends then start becoming the people that will stay longer than the person you're intimate with. So that's my favorite recognized.
It's, and it's, I do completely agree with you, and it's something that I find so, not troubling, but we think of our romantic intimate partner as the most important person in our lives. Rightly or wrongly, they're our best friend, they're our confidant, you know, that we're intimate with, all of these things. But it's something that I saw, it's supposed to be like a few months ago, and it was like, why do we rely on one person to fulfill all of our emotional needs? And it was kind of exploring the pressure that it puts on that one person to, you know, solve all your work problems, solve all your home problems, solve all your family problems, solve all your friendship problems. You know, all of these things is that we rely so heavily on this one person for all of our emotional needs, and the pressure that brings on them. And it made me think a little bit. I mean, I'm not one, I would never advocate, because I don't believe in like polyamory or whatever. That's just not for me. But it does make me think of, where do we go to have our needs fulfilled? And what would it look like if we put less pressure on this one person to fulfill all of our needs, and instead we were like, my best friend is X person, my partner doesn't need to be my best friend, they can be something else, you know, a special friend, they'll be different, of course. You know, why, yeah, what would that look like for all of us? And I think that's something I'm grappling with, and actually, it's funny, quite a few of my clients grapple with that a lot, this idea of they want their partner to be this intense everything, yet when they don't meet those expectations, how those relationships fall apart, why that's so painful, and it's all our own expectations of the pressure that we put on this person.
Yeah, totally agree with that. I can speak from my side. You have to be your own hero.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, like, yeah. You have to
It's a blessing and a curse.
Yeah, because you almost have to be so self-reliant in your own needs, and almost fill your cup up before you can start saying, okay, I need this from someone, or I need to give this to someone. And like you said, attachment styles. So if you have that unhealthy attachment to that person, it's because of your needs, right? So you're now trying to fill that void that you should have filled in yourself. So it takes a lot of self-reflection. Mm. And I've gone through that. And it's just, it's nice to know there's someone there for you, don't get me wrong.
Yeah.
But that person should be a complement to your life versus the idea of being part of your life that is going to fulfill something great.
Yeah. It is so true. And actually, I think it's probably the reason I love coaching so much, because, bear with me, it's this idea that if someone gives you advice and they tell you what to do, you in some ways feel like that person plays such an important role in your life. Of course they're right. Of course you're going to believe everything they say. You want to trust them, whatever. So you lead with their advice. And it almost gets into this place where you lose a little bit of self-trust for yourself. You know, it's important to have confidence that you can go to seek advice. But if that's the only place... If that's the only place that you go to when you're making decisions is other people, then you will never be able to be firm and strong and confident in your own decisions. And, you know, that's basically what coaching does, is it makes you firm and strong in your own decisions. A coach will never give you advice, they will never tell you what to do. And I think that's really empowering. And it's made me think, well, we should adopt that in all areas of our lives, because yeah, you can get relationship advice from your friends, or you can get advice from your partner, for example. But if that's the only place you go to because you aren't sure how to make up your own mind, because you just, you can't sit with those feelings, you can't get perspective yourself, I think that's when it becomes far too much validation from other people as well.
Yeah, and to be fair, your friends and your family are probably going through the same experience, and they're dealing with it in their own way.
Yeah.
So you're only just getting that information from them, and even if it's great, you're only going to take 10% of that, or less.
Yeah.
So you just got a cocktail of advice, and then you're trying to make that your own, and then you're going out to the world and seeing what works and what doesn't work.
Yeah.
So yeah, having professional advice is good.
Yeah, and I think it's one thing that a professional can give you that other people can't, is just that impartiality and that space to speak. Because, and I think this is something that so many people have come to me with recently, is this idea of, I love my friends, they're amazing, but they're very quick to step in with their own opinions. And I think particularly when it comes to relationships, it's so risky having everyone else bombarding you with, well, I would do this, I think this, when actually only you know the ins and outs of your relationship. Mm. Only you know how you feel, what happens in those private moments. Even if you wanted to, you could not sit and list word for word all of the conversations you had, how they made you feel, all of that kind of stuff. So seeking advice and counsel is a nice thing, but no one will ever know your relationships like you do.
Yeah. And it's funny, even though you've gone through that experience, how you interpret it is very interesting
Oh yeah, it's this idea of, is that what they said? Yeah. Or is that how you interpreted it?
Exactly.
That is a big one.
I think tonality helps as well. And
yeah. It's funny, I have been dating someone and we have very different communication styles. He loves to speak on the phone, which, you know, is fine. I much prefer texting because I just love words. And putting words out, I think, you know, you can have time to think about how you want to phrase things. Rewrite sentences, you know, all of this kind of stuff. Whereas when you speak, what comes out, and it's quite hard to take it back. But then his argument is, well, I can't understand like the tone of voice or how you mean things, you know, and all that kind of thing. But finding that communication match is obviously quite important. But at the same time, how do you have those conversations about your communication style is it is tricky. Yeah. I thought I'd say it could be tricky, but no, it is tricky. Yeah, I don't know where it's going.
No, that's fine. That's fine. I think like when I hear that, I think about love languages as well. So like for me, it's like quality time, physical touch, and then the rest can
interchangeable. I'm with you. Yeah.
So for me, even though you know I would love to see my person like in person, it'd be better to like speak over the phone, for example. Even it doesn't need to be every day. Don't get me wrong.
Yeah.
I'll take my like call and just like I don't need to talk to you for like a couple of days and whatever.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's just
interesting. So you see a phone call as quality time?
Not really. Oh. But it's a supplement.
Interesting.
I don't need it all the time. Yeah. But the idea of meeting in person is priority.
Yeah.
And I feel like with texting you can do it with anybody, but to sit down and actually converse and use words out loud. There's some energy that translates to it versus the texting, which kind of loses that. That's just me.
It's funny, rationally I'm like, I can hear your argument. Emotionally I'm like, no, no. But then that's the thing, is that we're all so different. And I think what you said is that a lot of the time it comes down to prioritize and what are you willing to compromise to kind of help someone else be comfortable with these things. And you know, if your partner tries to speak on the phone, and where are you willing to compromise? Because I think we did talk about this before, it's about relationships do tend to be a lot about compromise.
Yeah.
And you know, I'm quite happy to admit, like, the person I'm with right now is like me compromising on basically everything. And it's like that moment where you're like, I'm happy to do that. But then again, it comes back to the other people giving advice when they're like, oh wow, you're compromising on everything. Mm-hmm. And the impact that that has. And it's just interesting because we get taught, you know, compromise, you know, that's all the relationships are. But when do you then start to compromise on who you are for your relationship?
True.
And that's, I think, quite fascinating, is that balance between relationships take compromise, they take work, they take these hard conversations, versus what does it mean to compromise on yourself for a relationship?
Because they always say, don't lead yourself in a relationship kind of thing.
Yeah.
But it depends on the compromise and how much of yourself you're losing in a compromise.
Yeah. Do you think that's ever happened to you?
Oh yeah, a few times. Actually, multiple times. It's when you find like different people, you're trying to sort of make work.
Yeah.
You're always trying to find, okay, what works, what doesn't work. But at the end of the day, I kind of stand on the idea of like, I don't have to compromise a lot if it's going to work long term. That's just me.
Yeah.
So I'm very much like, okay, this is working, okay, now I feel a bit uncomfortable with the idea of having to do this long term.
Yeah.
This is not really me. Authentically me is probably the version that I want to present to the world.
Yeah.
And so I don't want to do too much to lose that. So, yeah. And
I think that's a really important thing, that so many people, I can say, like, can lose yourself in a relationship. Whereas the goal is obviously that you are two people living, you're two people living two wonderful separate lives that come together at special moments, I suppose, rather than like your whole lives are enmeshed and quite messy.
Yeah.
I mean, that's what I think. But I wonder, you know, you said about keeping your like truest authentic self.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think helps you to do that?
So that's a good question, because I've gone through this interesting period where I'm like, I never used to show too much about my life. And then I was like, you know what? My friends like me for who I am.
Yeah.
Let me show it to the world. So
yeah.
I went to Comic-Con dressed up as Spider-Man.
Love it.
I know. And that would be geeky. But funny enough, a lot of people were like, whoa, that's cool.
Yeah.
I'm going to join.
Yeah.
And I'm like, I didn't know that side of me was attractive.
Yeah.
And then like me working out. Now I'm showing elements of my progress. It's like, oh, wow, you're inspiring. And I'm like, really? I didn't know that was a thing.
Yeah.
So I used to hide things that I've been very passionate about. Because I wanted to play it safe. But then I was like, this is not fun. This is just me trying to cater to a need for someone that doesn't exist yet. And if they do exist, that's not the real version of who I am. Eventually, they do find out.
Yeah, yeah.
So,
because they say something like, you know, the first 3 months of dating, people are always trying to like make an effort, trying to be like, ooh, who do they want me to be, sort of thing. But I think it's something like after 3 months, unless you're like sociopath or whatever, you cannot keep up a lie for 3 months. Is roughly what they estimate with kind of like within being yourself. And I wonder if that's why quite a lot of relationships at that stage are like, yeah, we dated for a few months, but it didn't go anywhere. Yeah. And what they mean is, it was probably too much effort to keep up this pretense. And actually, yeah, when they reveal themselves, or maybe they find it too hard to reveal themselves, and there's like that friction between, I want you to show me who you are, and then the person's like, I'm scared if I show you that you won't like me. And that kind of conflict, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly. And I think that's the thing I was going to say, and it just slipped my mind. But in terms of your authentic self, you're going to attract the right people by being that, because that's how your friends find you, right?
Yeah.
You might make friends in the beginning and they might not know much about you, but eventually they do, and they still stick around. And I think people fall in love with potential.
Mm. Oh, that is a big...
And that's happened to me a lot of times.
As in, you fall in love with someone else's potential, but they fall in love
both
with yours.
Yeah, yeah. You want to see something long-term in someone that presents elements of great qualities, but then there's some downsides, and you're like, you gotta make a radar decision.
Yeah.
But your emotions might be tied into it.
Yeah.
Because you invested so much time into it, so it's sunk cost.
Yeah.
So you're pretty much putting coins in there.
It's always something which, I don't know where I heard this, but I think it's a really good point around if you like, I mean, the statistics vary. If you like 90% of someone and don't like 10% of them, you should be with that person, because you should be able to handle the 10% of things that you don't like. One of my friends was like, oh, I think it's more like 75-25. Like, you know, you should be able to put up with the 25% for the amazing times. And it's interesting, like, what those ratios are for different people, because, yeah, there isn't... Some people will be like, no, I'm happy to compromise on, like, 60-40 if the things, like, aren't so big. But someone else would be like, 90-10 is ludicrous.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, that 10% could be something huge. But I think it is about finding that balance for you, and also what are those things that you're willing or not willing to compromise on, and what are those things which might divert away from you being yourself whilst in that relationship.
Yeah. Do you think like boundaries are important, and then talking about that early on, or just saying like, you know what, this is what I'm searching for, or what's your stance from a female's perspective? Like,
yeah.
Because when a guy goes like, yeah, I'm looking for something casual, they can't just say that.
Why not?
I mean, it's happened to me in the past where I've said that, but in a way that's not as direct.
Oh, interesting.
Because you don't want to scare the person off, but then they don't really understand.
Why would you scare them off if they just want something casual too?
No, then it's fine.
So why would you scare them off?
Because you're trying to gauge the situation.
But if they want a relationship,
yeah,
then you're not right for them.
Exactly, yeah.
Again, it comes out of the fear of rejection, doesn't it?
It does.
But it's not, I don't know whether this is just me. I think quite a few of my friends are similar, of just say it how it is. Because, you know, surely you would rather know on day one, this person's looking for a long-term relationship. They're not saying, I'm looking for a long-term relationship with you. They're just saying, that's in their sights. Some, you know, I'd rather go on a date and someone say, I just want something casual right now, I just want to have a relationship, or... you know, whatever, because it gives context as to where that person is in their life. And it also helps you gauge like where you are yourself. If you're undecided, you could be like, yeah, this is making me think about what I want for myself as well. And I think a lot of dating when you like are newly single or whatever should be new and exciting and exploratory and helping you to work out what you want or don't want in a partner, yes, but also what you want for yourself. And I think the moment that we can acknowledge and say openly, I really am looking for a long-term relationship, I think that's a huge thing and something to be celebrated, because so many people shy away from it because they're like, oh, I'm embarrassed that I want a long-term relationship. And I was like, why? It's a beautiful and wonderful thing to want a relationship, to be with someone, to share your life with someone. That's really special. Why do we find that so scary, I wonder?
Because I think it talks about that whole idea of surrendering yourself. Not, I don't want to use the word, but it's like, it's a way of giving yourself to someone in a way where it's like, we had all that independence saying, okay, we want to have fun, enjoy life. And now you're saying you want to cohabitate and share something with someone. You're like, why?
But you're
maybe share dessert.
You're jumping ahead like 2 years.
No, I'm not talking about cohabitation, but like mentally, you know, like lifestyle and all that stuff.
Yeah.
There's an element of like, oh, right, that's my person. I have to see that person every often. And
but maybe that's more a reflection of where you're at.
Probably.
And do you really want a long-term relationship?
white person.
Yeah.
If the white person showed up, I'd probably be like, okay, I'll consider that for sure. But for me to go, like, that's what I'm looking for. It's almost like trying to find my car keys and then realizing that the more I search for it, the harder it is to find.
Oh, yeah. Oh, my goodness. Yeah. Because there is a difference between being like, I want a relationship, but I'm really open to what happened, which I think is the healthiest place.
So that's where I'm at right now.
Yeah. And I think that's really healthy and a really good place and, you know, really good to communicate that. But there are definitely people who are like, I really want a relationship. Oh, my goodness. It's the most important mission in my life. There is nothing more unattractive than going on a date with someone who's just desperate to be in a relationship with someone. They're not saying, I want to be in a relationship with someone who exhibits these qualities. They're just like, oh my goodness, anyone will do. And that's the vibe that they give off.
Yeah.
And I find that, I mean, I've been on a few dates with people like that and I'm like, no.
Yeah, same.
It's crazy. You're like, you don't even see me, you just see someone to date.
Thank you. So yeah, that's kind of the, well, hold on. You don't even know my story, you just want to say yes to it.
Oh, yeah.
You're like, oh, you don't even. And I think it's funny because we see ourselves very complicated in terms of who we are. So even though you're putting your best qualities out there, there's a whole bunch of other stuff you're trying to say, slow down. You have to pace yourself to it.
Yeah.
I think a lot of relationships, whether they're casual or serious, is about pace and not trying to jump in so deep because.
Yeah,
it's a vulnerable place as well. So
I think that's really important, actually, pace of a relationship, because I feel like, is it inevitable at the beginning of a relationship, you're so excited by the emotions of this is someone new and shiny to play with, and it's all very exciting, but that is that sustainable? Like, I've definitely been in relationships which are super toxic, and they kept that intensity and that pace, and everything moved so quickly. And at the time I was like, this is the best thing ever, oh my gosh. But actually when you step out of it, you're like, whoa, how did life happen in that way? And you're just gonna get swept up in it. I think pace is really important, because I think when you date someone which brings peace, calm, serenity, that's quite a soothing word, serenity. You see life seems, not slower is the wrong word, but as it seems like manageable, it goes in segments that you like. And maybe it seems boring to be like, we had a good pace of relationship, but actually surely a little bit of boring and healthy is better than like, oh my goodness, I'm so swept up, I'm 2 years into this relationship, how did that happen?
Yeah.
And I think sometimes we can find ourselves in.
I think we are driven by our emotions for the most part when it comes to decision making. And so anyone who can stir that makes you feel some way. So even in politics and, you know, things that we watch, it's those stories, that drama, that up and down.
Yeah.
That's what gets a hook. But if you watch, if you just read a textbook, you're like, why am I reading this? But it's good for you, right?
Yeah, I mean, would I compare a healthy relationship to a textbook?
Depends on what you read.
True. But it's funny, I actually was speaking to a client about this just before, and we were talking about this emotional versus rational mind, and almost this idea, if we think the emotional mind wants all the highs and lows and it's really exciting and, you know, all of that, whereas the rational mind is like, I want peace, I want safety, I want security, and obviously there has to be a balance between the two. And it was really, I just love the way that she described it, is she was like, oh, you know, the two parts of me were like, we're negotiating with one another. And I was like, that is exactly what it should be. It's not that one side always wins.
Yeah.
It's that they're having a conversation, they're communicating. The two parts of you are in negotiation as to what do we want to happen? How are we going to balance the emotions that we have with this person or this situation with the rational stuff that goes on in life? What can we manage? And I just really love that description of it, as like, we've got to negotiate these different parts of us.
Yeah. And it's not, I don't think we've been looking at this binary, like it's either this or that.
Yeah.
But it's not. I don't think life is binary.
No.
You can't be like, it's got to be this way or that way. I mean, you can have both.
Yeah.
It's just how much of it is going to take away from the ultimate goal of what you want.
Yeah. And I think that's it, is we should always be thinking about the ultimate goal of what we want, where we want our life to go. And actually a relationship should be complementary to that. It should run alongside it. I don't think the biggest thing that we want in life should be a partner. And I think, I think that's quite controversial for some people, but actually, I do think that's the healthiest way, is being able to address, this is who I am, this is what I want, and having a partner to share it would be amazing, but it's not going to stop me if I don't get it.
Yeah.
It's like an added bonus, like having a partner would be amazing, but it's not the be all and end all of life.
Yeah. And I think, you know, I think I tried to bring the conversation to attraction, what that really is, and I know we've got a few minutes left, but the idea of you being healthy and, you know, doing the things you love and being authentic is what you're going to attract. So if you're in the wrong place, like say you go to the clubs, you know, popping bottles and stuff and doing things you shouldn't be doing, and you do that on the
regular. But there's a time and place for that.
Of course.
Exactly.
Yeah, but if you do that as the way to get something,
yeah,
you're going to attract elements of that.
Yeah. Yeah, it is so true. And it's something that I was talking to a friend about this in a friendship way, and we were talking about how, you know, different stages of life, different friends, you know, naturally just, you know, drift apart kind of thing. And we were talking about like how, where would I like to meet new friends? And, you know, we were talking about the things that she's passionate about and, you know, the type of lectures that she wants to go to or clubs that she'd join or like the sports teams that she's part of. And that seems so natural to be like, I'm going to go to those places to meet new friends and whatever. Mm-hmm. But the moment that you suggest that as like a way to meet a partner, people are almost like, oh my gosh, but you just meet partners like at the pub or on Tinder or whatever. Mm-hmm. And it's so funny. It's like, no, why can't you meet your partner at like your gym class? Why can't you meet them doing the stuff that you love?
Yeah.
I think that'd be the best way.
I mean, it sounds fairy tale to a lot of people, but you got to shoot your shot.
Yeah, I don't know, like... Sometimes, it's funny, this is my negotiation between the rational and my emotional, is sometimes I'm like, I live in Cloud Cuckoo Land, I live in fairy tale and want, like, you know, someone to come up to me for my gym class and whatever. But then at the same time, it's like, but that actually could happen. And actually, that is a rational thought. That sometimes we just think it's too emotional, it's too wishy-washy. But then it's like, I know that happened to someone.
Mm.
So it's almost like your rational can say, no, this thing that you're getting carried away with could happen.
Yeah.
But also, I suppose we also do need to keep things in check and be like, maybe they're not going to want to be up on that first night. Maybe not.
I mean, the one thing I know is that life is a numbers game, and then you are the choices you make. So.
For sure. Yeah, that's the biggest thing. You are the choices you make. And also, the majority of things in life are a reflection of you, and you know, even your friends are a reflection of you. You know, like the rule of five, you are the five people you surround yourself with. And it's all about, very cheesily, it's all about the work you do with yourself first, and the way that you then, yeah, project that to the world.
What a nice way to end the podcast.
Yeah, love it.